Thank you to Cash App for sponsoring this episode.
What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening.
Mae Scott is a multi-crime survivor and author. Her story of survivorship begins at the age of 14, when she met the man she would eventually marry. And although their relationship would end violently, and her ex-husband would face a potential life sentence for the harm he forced upon Mae, her legal battle didn't end there. After navigating the criminal justice processes, as well as a treacherous family and divorce court journey, Mae now uses her experiences to bring awareness to others. The Broken Cycle Media team is deeply grateful for Mae's time, advocacy, and incredibly powerful perspectives.
My name is Mae. I live in Colorado. I have been here since I was about 8 years old, so this is definitely home. Now that I am in my 40s, I think my children would describe me as very embarrassing, which to me indicates I am likely doing something right. When they say those comments, it is usually with laughter and some joy in their eyes. I think the other thing people say about me is that I am very strong. I went through a time of really hating being called strong because I am tired of being strong. And I don't know that that is always a compliment anymore because it's exhausting. I am the youngest of three, all girls. My oldest sister is 11 years older than I am. And then other sister is about 3 years older than I am. I didn't know a lot about how those childhood experiences shaped me until I dove into things in therapy. If I were to tell you about my life growing up, it would be very average. My parents are still married. My parents owned a small business for about 20 years. My parents were wonderful role models for love, marriage, a healthy relationship. We would do family game night, family movie night. I am not from Colorado. We moved here when I was 8. My oldest sister had just graduated from high school, and she decided not to move to Colorado with us. At the time, I felt confused because I was young. And I didn't realize until much later how abandoned I felt. She didn't do anything wrong. It was my internalization. I very much personalized this, even though there was no reason to. My older sister, the one 3 years older than I am, when she was about 14, she ran away from home with a friend that they would probably identify as a bad influence. She came back. And I see now from this other perspective and with the help of therapy, that was another big abandonment wound that I had. I became incredibly codependent at a young age, and I didn't realize it. It didn't necessarily fit the pattern of codependency that we see a lot with addiction, but I was going into adolescence feeling very much like I was not a person who was worthy of people staying. I started going out of my way to be accommodating to everybody, to my sisters, to my parents. I often used to clean out the kitchen cabinets just because and feel so proud and tell my parents, like, look what I did. Internally being like, now they're not going to leave me. Whereas they thought that was nice, but my young brain really twisted a lot of these normal things into me becoming very anxious in my attachment style. When I started high school, I went to a very large high school, and there were a lot of new people. It was very overwhelming. It wasn't necessarily a bad thing. It was just a lot. I very much wanted to be an adult. I was thinking that high school was a step that I had to take to get to college, to grow up, to get married, to have kids. That was honestly what I always wanted. I thought, just keep my head down and work hard, do my schoolwork, and come out the other side of high school. My oldest sister modeled for some time, and my middle sister is over 6 feet tall, long legs. My sisters are gorgeous, and I was going into high school at maybe 5'5 and 90 pounds soaking wet. I was very insecure. I didn't really know much about hair and makeup or fashion, clothes, and it showed. When you are going into a big building with people that have already fully gone through puberty and know how to use a hairdryer, I was a very insecure, kind of nerdy kid. I remember the very beginning of freshman year, I walked in with my gigantic JanSport backpack that had every single folder and binder and notebook, my compass and protractor and markers and any supply I might need. And even though we had lockers, I would carry it all with me all the time because I didn't want to forget something in my locker. One of my other good friends at the time, so clearly, I remember her telling me, you have to take off this backpack. You're not helping your case here, girl. I remember it was a very slow process. I was not super social. I did have friends. People started having parties with some alcohol and marijuana. I was very not interested. It just wasn't my scene. I liked school because it made sense to me. It was predictable. I liked being a teacher's pet because, again, I think that made me feel like I had value. I don't know that school came super easy to me. I got good grades, and that's because I paid attention and did the work. The beginning of sophomore year of high school, I was in the lunch line in the cafeteria, and this girl came up to me and said, there is someone in the same science class and the same French class, and he wants your number. I honestly thought it was a little bit of a prank at first. I had crushes on boys, and I guess I did go to homecoming freshman year, but I wasn't popular. And I said, what the heck? Sure. So I gave her my phone number to give to him. And this was also back in the day of AOL Instant Messenger. We had dial-up internet. When I would come home from school, I would typically get on AOL and even chat with my friend who lived around the corner. And he had tried to call me after school, and he got directly sent to voicemail because the internet was using the phone line. And I just figured he never called, and that was fine. I didn't even really know who he was, but I started paying attention in science and French class because, again, I wasn't really ever looking around me, honestly. I was very honed in on, got to get my schoolwork done. So I then learned who he was. He ended up calling the next day and the call went through and we started talking a lot. Then we would start on instant messenger chatting. He was very confident. He was the total opposite of me. And I liked that he was outgoing. I would have never probably asked somebody for their phone number in high school. We'd see each other in class. I didn't have much of an opinion about him at first, which maybe sounds really mean. But I think what I mean in that is I was still very guarded, thinking that there is no way that he likes me. From the beginning, though, it had only been a few days that we had been hanging out and, I guess, in quotes, dating, that he told me that he loved me. I remember thinking, that's weird, and also how nice. He loves me. I felt very seen by him. He would leave notes in my locker. He would leave flowers on my desk when I walked into a classroom. Things that I now know were love bombing. At the time, I didn't know that.
Thank you again to Cash App for sponsoring this episode. As a 1984 baby, I feel like I've seen it all when it comes to banking and money. When I was really young, cash was king. When I started my earliest years of babysitting, debit cards had just come along, and waiting until my mom could take me to the bank to deposit my cash or even a check was something that could take weeks. I catch myself marveling at the ease of everything financial nowadays. Like Cash App, which is my absolute personal favorite method to send and receive money these days. Cash App is the premier mobile-based financial services platform and digital wallet that allows users to send, receive, and even invest money. And in my opinion, Cash App is the platform that's the easiest to use. And Cash App just released a new status program for the way people actually spend called Cash App Green. It unlocks new ways for you to pay, get rewarded, and easily grow or manage your money on your terms. Now, when you spend at least $500 a month with the Cash App card or Cash App Pay, you earn green status, which unlocks benefits like up to $200 of free overdraft coverage, higher borrow limits, and custom personalized cashback offers every Friday at places you love to shop. Turn everyday spending into status with Cash App Green. Download Cash App today or visit cash.app/new to learn more about this and other great features launching now. For a limited time, new Cash App customers can earn $10 if they use the code CASHAPP10 in their profile at sign up and send $5 to a friend within 14 days. That code is CASHAPP10. Terms apply. Cash App is a financial services platform, not a bank. Banking services provided by Cash App's bank partners. Prepaid debit cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC. Cash App Green, overdraft coverage, borrow, cashback offers, and promotions provided by Cash App, a Block, Inc. brand. Visit cash.app/legal/podcast for full disclosures.
Once I got to know my ex, I learned he had dated a lot of people at our high school. And I thought, this is it. I am going to be the one who makes this player settle down. This thing that we had seen in media of taming the bad boy, it very quickly evolved to us spending all of our time together. We are the same grade in school, but we are almost 2 years apart in age because he was the oldest and I was the youngest. So he got his driver's license at the beginning of sophomore year, and he would pick me up and drive me to school. We had classes together. We would eat lunch together after school. I would always make us do our homework before we did anything else. And I think his parents really liked that. He is an intelligent human. He didn't work very hard, so he didn't get very good grades. I think his parents loved that I would go home with him after school, and I would say, we are not doing anything else until we do our homework. They thought, wow, this is somebody who can probably be a very good influence on him. I had met his parents. He has two brothers. They were all in high school at the same time. His dad was an attorney and his mom was a paralegal support staff for him. I saw a lot of parallels between our lives. He's one of three boys. I'm one of three girls. Our parents both own their own kind of business. We both want to get married and have kids. I just assumed he was a safe, average person. And I saw somebody who I could mold into who I wanted him to be. Because at the time, when he was very much fawning over me, he would do really anything that I asked. And in my head, I had this future planned. I'm going to marry somebody. They're going to be successful. We are going to have a home, raise our kids there, and I can make him into that person, which I can say that is very unhealthy and very unfair. I don't think all of those thoughts were super conscious thoughts at the time. This is me in my 41-year-old mind looking back and seeing some of the things that I likely did to add to the unhealth of this relationship. I think he saw somebody who he could control and manipulate, and I saw somebody who I could make into the person that I knew he could be. He had all of the markings for this. He wanted to be an attorney. I could hold his hand and get him there. We were only together for a couple months, and then he dumped me the night before the Sadie Hawkins dance where the girls asked the boys. He dumped me the night before the dance for my best friend. I think she did like him. I mean, he was a likable person. Most perpetrators are. I was devastated. I ended up still going to the dance with the group, and every picture, my eyes are all red and puffy. They started dating. So his best friend reached out to me and was very kind. And then he and I actually started dating. And I laugh about high school. Even when I watch shows about high schoolers, there's like this group of friends and everyone's dating everybody else and breaking up and getting back together. So after a couple months of him dating my best friend, he came back, tail between his legs. He said, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be with her. I love you and I miss you. And so we got back together. Again, we are 14 and 16 years old, and he is saying, if we were 18, I would marry you right now. And things that are red flags. He used to talk about our future constantly. All of the things that he was going to do and what our life would look like. I always approached adulthood that I kind of wanted an average life. I didn't need anything extravagant. I didn't need anything over the top. I just wanted to be able to pay my bills, have a stable home environment for my kids, have some friends, be able to take a vacation every once in a while. He would take that and say, not only are we going to have a house, but it's going to be a very nice house. And you will be my wife. And I don't want you to have to clean the house. That's beneath you. He would say, we'll have somebody to help you with the kids. And we also likely will have a mountain home because we live in Colorado and we like to ski. So we will need that as well. And also either a lake house or a beach house. We should have a family car, but then we also should have a nice car for date nights. And we maybe should look into getting some sort of an apartment or something downtown so that when we do go out for date night, we can just stay downtown. He really took it and ran without really thinking about the reality of who's going to carry 3+ mortgages? And how are you really going to pay for all that stuff? Just on the surface, it was a fantasy. That is what I feel like was my whole dating, even early marriage life, is he was building me this future with his words that was incredibly appealing. Now this is 11th grade. We broke up again, telling each other, if we're going to get married and be together forever, we have to date other people first. So that's exactly what we did. We broke up to date other people with the intention of getting back together. One of the things that was very consistent, even from high school, he was an incredibly jealous person, which also was confusing to me when this breakup, get back together, yes, go date other people play came in. He thought everybody wanted to date me. I couldn't even have a conversation with my male cousin. We got back together at the end of our senior year. And at that point, we had both dated other people. I had already sent a deposit to go to a college out of state. That was my plan. And when we got back together, he again promised me the world if I would just stay in state and go to college where he was going to go to college. It didn't take much convincing because I was terrified to go out of state. I was kind of looking for a reason to stay anyway, and he gave it to me. He said we would have so much fun in college together, and we basically could just start our married lives now. I did everything I could to help support him so that we could live this life together. So I stayed in Colorado. We went to college together. I lived in the dorms my first 2 years and basically was at his place the whole time anyway. And then we started living together our junior year of college. We got married December of our senior year of college and then graduated the following May. We both went directly to grad school. I mean, we were feeling pretty ambitious at the time. I took on all of those stereotypical female roles immediately. Even though we were both working, both in school, we didn't have children at the time. I told him I wanted to do all the cooking, do all the dishes, do all the laundry, do all the housekeeping. And looking back, I'm thinking, why did I want to do that? But again, I think I was trying to secure my place there, that now he needed me. I was making sure I was adding value to the relationship and that he needed me and that he wouldn't leave me. He never said, well, hang on, why don't I do something? He just said, okay, because it benefited him. The resentment started building pretty early. I never said it out loud. So I can't put all the blame there. Nobody can read anybody else's mind. It's that scene from The Breakup with Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn. I want you to want to do the dishes. I want you to want to come spend time with me while I'm serving you. He, from the moment we got married, was, when are we having a baby? I want to have a baby. We hadn't even finished college yet. I was 21 years old. He would even suggest we go to like a fertility doctor. It was a little bit flattering. And I do think it was a way to trap me, to make sure that I never left him. Before our daughter was born, we both started graduate school. He had applied for law school and did not get in. And so to help him get into law school, he decided to get a master's in legal administration to kind of boost his resume and his grades. We were in graduate school together. I finished up my coursework, had a baby, and graduated about a week later. There was always a little bit of jealousy, always a little bit of controlling behavior of who are you spending time with? Where are you? And then we had a baby. And I don't think honestly, that he was expecting to feel as jealous of our child as he did. It's all consuming, especially that first time. You don't really have space or time for much else. It was a problem in our marriage. Even waiting those mandatory 6 weeks to be intimate again before you have a doctor check things out and make sure that it's safe and appropriate added a lot of strain to our marriage. That I was not quite at his beck and call anymore, that I was spending time with a baby and that it was exhausting to me. And even though I think it was something he very much wanted, I think he was surprised at what actually happens when you have a baby. He continued to apply to law school. The only place he got into law school was in Michigan. So we packed up our 3-month-old baby and moved to Michigan. I was very lucky that a girl I went to graduate school with happened to be from that same town where we were moving, and she was moving back there. So she was really helpful for us to even know where to live or anything about this town. We get out there and I have a 3-month-old baby. I'm breastfeeding. The baby doesn't sleep. My husband is starting a pretty rigorous course load in law school, and I was very depressed. I really don't know if it was postpartum versus just circumstance. And I told him about 2 months after we had been in Michigan, I said, I want to go home. It was a big fight, and he called my mom. He was going to come home for the holidays to Colorado anyway, but we agreed that the baby and I would go early. I had no idea what doing that would do to my life, because suddenly I owed him. I hurt him in such a way. I abandoned him. To be clear, I didn't leave my marriage. I just needed to go home and be around the grandparents to help me with my baby and my friends. I was very isolated out there. I needed to go home. While I'm in Colorado and he's in Michigan and I have our baby, he is demanding that I send him nude photos. He would tell me to go get household objects and insert them in myself and send him pictures. This is how I had to prove that I actually loved him and that I wasn't going to leave him and that I wasn't coming back to Colorado to cheat on him or whatever other scenarios he had imagined. That was when I first started to see some overt, abusive, concerning behavior. For the first time, I realized at least that there was some sort of upper hand being had in a relationship. Right now, I owed him because I hurt him. I hadn't really experienced that or seen that before. And I felt like I did owe him. I felt horrible that I left him in Michigan by himself. And so I complied with everything. I mean, our sex life was always a little bit strange to me in the sense that he felt that a married couple should have sex every single day, always. And that's what we did, even if nobody was super enthusiastic about it. That was the expectation. He would brag about it to anybody that he could. And my friends would ask me questions about it. People knew that that wasn't normal or average, and I just thought it was because he said it was. I didn't want to admit that anything was wrong ever, so I just put on a happy face and didn't talk about it and just did whatever was asked of me. After the holidays, I made the best of it. I decided to get out more, did some library story times, try to meet some people. I had a baby and he was in law school. And so his parents were paying for all of our bills, all of our rent, utilities, everything. It got to the point that they called a meeting with us about the spending. He was going out to bars very frequently after class, going out to lunch every day during class. He did all of this when neither one of us was working and his parents were fully supporting us. So his parents approached us and said, "This spending is out of control. May needs to get a job to support you." The people pleaser that I was, I said, "Okay." So I got a job and I went back to work, and I was working kind of a swing shift. So we didn't have to do any daycare. I would go into work at like 4 a.m., work until he had class, or sometimes I'd go in more for like an overnight shift. I got us on food stamps. I did all this research. I was looking at what we could do to make our financial situation better. And he kept doing what he was doing. As long as I was able to pay for all of his spending, his parents were okay with it. So that was the rest of our time in Michigan. My ex had wanted another baby, and I kind of put my foot down. I said, "You haven't even finished law school. I'm working. We have a baby." As soon as we got back to Colorado, he said, "Okay, we're back in Colorado. We're going to have another baby." So we started trying for another baby. He took the bar and he didn't pass the bar. And then he took the bar again like 6 months later and he didn't pass the bar. At this time, I was pregnant because I trusted that he would have passed the bar and would have been working and we would have had income. At this point, neither one of us is working. Again, his parents were paying for everything for us. I had our second. He passed the bar 2 months later. And he started working for his dad. I was a stay-at-home mom to our two kids. I very much wanted to be done having children. It was so much because I did everything. However I got it done, it was on me. But the pressure came from when he was home, he needed and expected to be the center of attention. It would be like 6 o'clock. I'm making dinner. Kids are at home. And he would be upset with me that I didn't meet him at the door naked. And we would fight about it. I have kids like crawling around or playing games, asking me for help. And you want me to meet you at the door naked? And he would say yes. And he couldn't understand why I didn't do that. I was done having kids after two. We had one of each gender. We thought that was pretty cool. They are 4 years apart. He really wanted a third kid because we both came from families of three. And I remember having these discussions with him about I didn't want a middle child. I know how silly that might sound, but I just had seen and heard so much personally and professionally. It is challenging to be a middle child. Long story short, we had a third child. At that point, I think he could see that I was unhappy. And if we had another baby, he knew he had me for another 18 years in his mind. So we had a third. Our third was born in 2017, and things were honestly status quo. It was still that I did everything. He went to work. We were in very deep debt. I would ask him about it and try to get involved in finances. And he would tell me that the firm where he worked with his dad and brothers owed him a lot of money. He was going to figure it out. And then we were going to pay off all of our credit cards. And I'm talking like $100,000 of credit card debt. But if I questioned him, I was told that I was wrong. I was stupid. I didn't understand it, that it was not a big deal. There's always more money to be made. I went to the grocery store. I had our baby, cart full of groceries. I check out everything, and every single credit card and my debit card got declined. So I called him and he didn't answer. I called the office. It was his parents' home office. His mom answered the phone and I said, "I need to talk to him." And she said, "Oh, he's out playing hockey." It was the middle of the day. people exercise in the middle of the day. I am not trying to be judgmental of that. I had to leave my groceries. I had to apologize to the staff there who had to go put everything back on the shelves. I had a screaming child at this point who had his heart set on some of those snacks that we couldn't bring home. And I told him I wanted a divorce. I said, I am not going to live like this at all anymore. He said he would change it. He would fix it. Things would be better. And I didn't want to break up my family. I was just exasperated and embarrassed. And I didn't want to live like this anymore. I'm basically doing everything by myself anyway. So I may as well just do it by myself and not have to deal with his baloney and all of it. The weird sex stuff. We kind of maintained the course until COVID. When COVID happened, I mean, everybody's lives changed, and I'm not unique in that at all. He started working from home. At that point, I have two kids that are in school that I'm trying to homeschool, and then a preschooler who is very needy because three-year-olds are. And I'm trying to help the older kids navigate what this huge global crisis is. And what I saw my husband doing was sleeping in until like 10 a.m. every day, getting up and working out for a couple of hours in our basement by himself, going to take a shower, then taking a nap, and then scrolling TikTok for upwards of like 6 hours a day because I would look at his screen time. And I am running around like a chicken with my head cut off. I would see and hear from my friends, like we had our bubble, and these families really coming together, doing projects around the house that they never got to do before. That is not what was happening at my house. It was a very big slap in the face. Summer of 2020, we went on an adults-only trip to Arizona with some of our closest friends, as 2020 had been very stressful. That trip was hell for me. I was being forced to have sex like 8 times a day. For my ex, there was an expectation, whether we were traveling with kids or without kids, that this trip was about him and whatever he needed, like staying in the bedroom all day when we're there with our friends. I hated myself. I hated him. I hated my life. And my friends started to see it. On that trip, they approached me and I downplayed things. And when we got home from that trip, I wrote him an email because I am a little bit avoidant. I also just wanted to be able to get all of my thoughts out without being interrupted or manipulated. I was starting to see things differently in 2020. And I wrote him an email telling him I wanted a divorce. I said, "This isn't like before. I am certain this time. Don't even bother talking to me about it." I told him he was a sex addict. He read the email and he asked if we could talk. And I held my ground for a bit. I said no. And he sat there and he cried. He said how everything I put in that email was correct, that he was a sex addict and that he barely worked and how he was a loser. He was going to change and he was going to be better. And I said, "That's great. Go change and be better for somebody else. As far as I'm concerned, this chapter is closed. I want nothing to do with you." I said, "Treat me like you would a colleague, because we are going to have to continue to have contact because we have children." And that's the extent of it. And he wore me down. We started marriage counseling in 2020. And eventually I gave in, because I didn't want this for my kids.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
He was arrested on November 20th, 2022. I decided then that there was no way he was ever going to be able to come back into our home. So I started consulting with divorce attorneys. Our original divorce judge said basically we couldn't do anything until the criminal stuff was settled. It took years.
Thank you again to Cash App for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget that for a limited time, new Cash App customers can earn $10 if they use the code CASHAPP10 in their profile at signup and send $5 to a friend within 14 days. Terms apply. Cash App is a financial services platform, not a bank. Banking services provided by Cash App's bank partners. Prepaid debit cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC. Cash App Green, overdraft coverage, borrow, cashback offers, and promotions provided by Cash App, a Block, Inc. brand. Visit cash.app/legal/podcast for full disclosures.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production, co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.